was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Sent lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Welcome, everyone, to episode 48 of the Matt Jones Podcast. We are taping this. Well, it's actually over the course of a couple days. It is a little bit of a hodgepodge of topics because after a return from vacation, we've got a lot of crazy stuff going on. We're going to start in a minute with our friend from Basketball Insiders. He's kind of become the Matt Jones Podcast NBA guru, Alex Kennedy. He's on Twitter at @AlexKennedyNBA. We're going to talk to him about all the crazy stuff that went down this weekend. There was an insane amount of oddities from free agency. And then, because as many of you know, the NASCAR series has come to Kentucky on Saturday, or will come to Kentucky on Saturday, Michael Waltrip, a Kentuckian from Owensboro, will also join us. So a good 1-2 combo of Alex Kennedy and Michael Waltrip. And by the way, we're also on the next episode. We'll talk a little bit about all the various stuff that's happened at UK in the last day or two, including some shakeup around the staff. But before I get to Alex, let me remind you about our newest sponsor and the sponsor of today's podcast, JackIrwin.com. That's JackIrwin.com. They make high market shoes for reasonable prices. They are some of the best looking and most well-constructed shoes on the market. They've now sent me two different types of shoes, and I absolutely love both of them. One of them sort of like a boat shoe, and then like kind of a loafer. And they're founded by two guys out of necessity. They lived in a place, they were like, we can't find a great pair of clean dress shoes at a reasonable price. So they just decided to make them themselves, and they've done an excellent job. They go direct to the consumer business model, so that way the retail markups you see in stores are not there. And if you live in a place, like many of you do, where you can't necessarily get really nice high-end shoes, then Jack Irwin is for you. So check them out, JackIrwin.com. And if you use the promo code Matt, they'll give you 15% off of your first order. So it's worth it. They have casual, dress, loafers, boots, everything. If you like shoes, and I know all of you do, Jack Irwin, Irwin.com. Promo code Matt for 15% off. So with that, from BasketballInsiders.com, a man who could use a nice pair of shoes, I think, because everybody could, Alex Kennedy. Alex, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing it all wrong. I mean, you're getting free shoes sent your way. I need to get that hookup. That sounds great to me.
You know what? Had I thought about it, I would have gotten them to send you a pair of shoes. Because I'm telling you, like we do all these ads, and I always say, like, oh, yeah, people just go, oh, whatever. But I end up using all these products because this company that sends all this stuff to us is really good. You have probably been busy over the last few days, I would assume. Is this been a crazy few days for you?
Yeah, it's been crazy, but it's a lot of fun. This is my favorite time of the year. I love basketball, obviously, so watching basketball during the season is fun. But, you know, I've always been a really big fan of the rumors and the transactions. So free agency is probably number one for me. Trade deadline is number two, and then draft is number three for me. But I love this, you know, talking to the players, the executives, you know, following all the different rumors, and especially covering the NBA. You know, when you cover other sports, you know, you look at the NFL or MLB, there's not nearly as many moves and blockbuster moves that there is in the NBA. So it's a lot of fun to see so much player movement and see the landscape of the NBA change so drastically, in the course of a couple of days. It's been a lot of fun.
You know, that is true. I hadn't really thought about it like that. But in terms of crazy big-time moves of stars, I guess in baseball it'll happen, but you'll only get maybe like one or two at a time, and they're kind of predictable. But, you know, crazy stuff can happen in basketball. Like, you know, I looked up one day and people were talking about Dwayne Wade going to the Bucks, and I was like, how in the world was it? No one has ever voluntarily moved from Miami to Milwaukee. But but in basketball, I guess that does happen. I want to get to all these moves, but I want to ask you a personal question for a second, because you're a young guy. And I noticed that when the Durant story came out, you had like an interview with Draymond Green sort of in his own words of how he ended up recruiting Durant, et cetera. How did you make these connections? Because for a dude like you, that's quite a connection to make. How did that happen?
Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that. I started talking to a lot of different players years ago, You know, I've met a lot of these guys when they were in high school and when they were in college. You know, started writing articles on them when they were very young. So I you know, like these guys, I consider them friends around the NBA. You know, I'm not really a fan of a specific team. I know some media people like to root for a specific team, but I really root for the guys that I've developed relationships with. So I've been fortunate enough to, you know, kind of get to know these guys really well and, you know, talk to them frequently. So throughout this whole, you know, drama and throughout this whole Kevin Durant sweepstakes, I was talking to a number of the players that were on teams that were in the rooms meeting with Durant. Draymond was one of them, and he agreed to do the interview right after Kevin Durant decided. And, you know, Draymond's someone who's very outspoken, as everyone knows. So his interview was, it was very entertaining. And, he says what's on his mind. He doesn't have a filter. So, it was great being able to talk to him, and I really appreciated him making time to do that. But,
I want to ask you about Draymond for a second.
Because
Draymond originally committed to Kentucky. So people like kind of know Draymond around here, because when Tubby was here, he was going to come here, and then he ended up Tubby left and he went to Michigan State. I sort of always liked him at Michigan State, but I now really cannot stand the guy. Tell me that in person or in your all's relationship that he's a likable guy. Is he?
He is one of the most friendly, likable players in the NBA, and I will say that. I will back him up on that. His playing style infuriates people. He, you know, obviously had the issues in the playoffs, and he trash talks, and, you know, he gets in your face, and he's someone that also, if you're playing against him, he's going to hurt your team in a number of ways. So I get the frustration.
Punch you in the nuts. That's one of the ways.
Maybe. You never know. But I will say, you know, I've never had a negative interaction with Draymond. You know, he's a really good guy. He, you know, donates a ton of money to charity. He made a ridiculous contribution to Michigan State when he signed his Big Max contract. He'd always been working in the community. Very humble, down to earth. And one thing, it's funny, every time I do an interview with Draymond Green, because I did one last summer after he signed his big contract, and there was a number of times during the playoffs where he talked, you know, after games, during the post-game press conferences. And every time he actually goes up and talks and, you know, says what's on his mind, people say, wow, I actually kind of like Draymond. You know, I thought I hated him, but he made a good point there. Or, you know, he's pretty articulate, or I like what he's saying. So it seems like there's, you know, kind of a misperception or a misconception about Draymond and who he is. Because on one hand, you know, he is that guy on the court that's fiery and going to do whatever he can to get under your skin, and he's going to bother their team. But, you know, off the court, he's a smart guy. He's friendly. He's accessible. There's so many star players that, you know, have been told that they're, you know, superstars and special since they were 13 years old. Draymond's one of those guys who, you know, is a late bloomer, a second-round pick, not really a guy that expected to be in this position. And I think those are some of my favorite players.
I think I still hate him.
I have relationships with. Yeah, I mean, they're the guys that are humble, down to earth. You know, they experience their success a little bit later, so they're more mature. Those are the kind of guys that I like. I really enjoy talking to and that I like.
Well, that makes sense. I think he still seems awful. But I know what you're saying. He does seem like a smart and interesting guy. All right, let's go to the Durant thing, because, you know, everybody has said really all year long, well, here's what Kevin Durant's going to do. He's going to sign a one-year deal with Oklahoma City. Then next year, when everything explodes, he's going to get to be a free agent. He'll sign 5 years then for a gajillion dollars. And then all of a sudden, it changed. So here's my question for you. Why? Okay, because everybody sort of has their opinion as to why. It strikes me he could have won in Oklahoma City. I think he certainly has a better chance of winning in Golden State. But my argument about him is that no matter what happens in Golden State, he won't get a ton of credit. Like, if they win, they'll say, well, they would have won maybe without you. And then if they lose, like, he'll get totally mocked. So, A, do you agree with that? And B, what do you think was the actual reason that drove him to sign with Golden State?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I don't think it's any one specific thing, but in talking to people around the situation and hearing what he kind of brought up during some of the meetings, it sounds like there was some frustration with the Thunder organization over, you know, some of the moves they had made, personnel moves, spending money, the vision in the future. Obviously, everyone always wants to bring up the James Harden move, and that's obviously a big one. You know, there was talk about Russell Westbrook and him not getting along, and I think that's always been a bit overstated. But you know, there have been articles today coming out saying that they just didn't feel like they really worked together because they both need the ball in their hands, they both take a ton of shots, and I think there was a belief initially that when Billy Donovan stepped in, that a lot would change, and it ended up being more similar to Scott Brooks' style than Kevin Durant may have liked. That came out today. But I think the biggest thing is he wanted to have fun playing basketball again. That's the big thing that I kept hearing when he was talking to these players that were in the meetings. I think in recent years, he had gotten really stressed out and really unhappy playing basketball. And part of it was because, you know, he had the injuries and, you know, he went from being the MVP and, you know, the guy everyone was talking about to kind of being, you know, overshadowed a bit. People were overlooking him and, you know, he had a dark time coming back from the injury. I'd be able to get off the couch, and he wanted to have fun again. And when you looked at this Golden State group and you talked to these guys, because he was talking to them throughout the entire year. You know, I mentioned that in the Draymond Green article. Draymond had been talking to him for a year. Steph Curry had been texting him for a year. Klay Thompson got to know him pretty well. You know, these guys were really reaching out to him for quite some time. And he saw how much fun they have. He saw, you know, even when they, you know, lost some games, everything was fun. You know, it was great. They were sharing the ball. It was unselfish. They were enjoying their season. You know, they were smiling. And you look at other teams around the league, and even when they're winning, they don't seem to be having as much fun doing it as the Warriors. And I think that was very attractive to Kevin, just because, you know, when he was younger, he was that guy. He was the guy that always had a smile on his face and friendly guy. And I think in recent years, whether it was some of the media turning on him, some of the injuries he faced, things like that, you know, basketball started not being as fun for him anymore. And I think when he met with the Warriors players and he talked to them throughout the year, he realized, okay, this could make basketball fun again. And I think also the big thing is he really realized that in order to be taken seriously and be talked about as, you know, an all-time great player or even, you know, arguably the best player in the NBA today, he needs rings. And I think he saw this Warriors team as very hard to get by. And he saw Steph Curry, LeBron James, these guys getting credit, and it's because they have championship rings. And I think he realizes this is his best chance to not only get a ring, but be able to start a collection of rings. And, you know, some people, like you said, you know, they may not give him as much credit because he did go join the Warriors. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about LeBron now winning multiple championship rings. And he's gotten a lot of credit, even though he went and teamed up with Dwayne Wade.
But it's not the same, Alex. Hang on. That's not the same thing. I mean, I keep hearing that analogy, but that's not the same thing. When LeBron went to team up with Dwayne Wade, he was the best player. Right? Like, he's the best player. Durant is going to join the two-time MVP. Now, I think he may still...
People at the time said, though, that he was that LeBron...
I understand, but it was clear. It was clear on day one, Alex, who was better. Okay? I mean, it was clear
on day one,
and that's not going to be the case there. I mean, Durant, I think, will lead that team in scoring, but it's not clear that he's substantially better. If they go win the title next year, I think people will say that's a great team, but I still don't think people will think Durant's the best player in the NBA. They'll still think it's LeBron, even if Golden State wins. Like, the fun part is interesting because that actually, I can see that. But if he really wants to be considered, like, the best, I don't think you do that if you join this team, or do you disagree?
No, I see what you're saying. I mean, I think the fun part was definitely number one, but I do think that legacy was in mind as well. And I think we look at players' ring count, and that's so important for whatever reason, you know, fair or not. We talk about that nonstop, about how many rings a guy has. And I think he realizes that. And even if, you know, years from now people want to say, oh, well, you know, look what he had to do to go get that ring, I think he just wants that on his resume. And I think, you know, the fun thing is a big part of it. I think from what he told, you know, the different players in the different meetings, you know, he wanted to have fun again. He didn't want to be, you know, not miserable. That's a bad word. He's making tons of money. He's playing basketball for a living. I don't want to make it sound like Kevin Durant is miserable, but it wasn't as fun as it used to be for him, and he wanted to get that feeling back. So I think that was a big part of it, too. And I think also just the unselfishness in Golden State. You know, Draymond Green said during the meeting, he said, you know, we don't use the word I on this team. We use the word we. You know, it's all about the team. You know, make the extra pass. We don't care about stats. We don't care about awards. And then Steph Curry even told him, you know, if you win MVP, I'll be the first one there congratulating you and applauding you. We don't care about that stuff. We're winning championships. We're trying to form a dynasty.
And I think that's fair. And I believe that's true. But let's listen. That all sounds beautiful. And I know that, that's like a wonderful thing. Everybody sings Kumbaya, passes the ball, and makes threes. What if they lose? Okay, now I don't think they will. But what if they do? Like, what if the Cavs get Dwayne Wade or whatever and they lose again? You want to talk about legacy? Doesn't that then crush Durant's legacy?
Well, here's the thing. I think it would definitely take his legacy would take a hit in the short term. You know, it's just like, you know, I hate to keep bringing up Miami, but when, you know, that LeBron Wade Bosh team should have beat the Dallas Mavericks that first year they were all together.
And he got crushed. And he got crushed for it.
And they got crushed. Then they did get crushed for it. If they lose, they're going to get crushed for it. You're absolutely right about that. But I do want to point out, all four of these guys, you know, they're big four. When you talk about Curry, Durant, Thompson, Green, they're all under contract for quite some time. I think Durant's going to stay long term. I think he's, you know, signing a 1-year deal with a 2nd-year option just so he can get more money. But these guys are all under 28 years old, so they're not going anywhere. I think even if they were to lose, they have multiple opportunities to win championships and, you know, really turn this thing around and
wait, but again, Alex, turn this thing around. This is the they were three minutes.
Turn this thing around if they lose. If they lose this year, turn it around and get back to winning. Look, I'm not saying the Warriors can turn anything around. They won 73 games.
Look, this
if
is
they
listen.
Were to lose this upcoming season.
I love you. I love you, Alex. But I feel like I'm listening to the Warriors PR guy here for a second. I mean, at some point, Listen, the kid should do whatever he wants. It's his life, and I think kid, if he wants to go there, he should go. You can't begrudge him, okay? You can't begrudge him that. With that said, I do think there's a real risk in this. He has been like a universally liked player. That's gone now, right? That's gone now. He's not going to be universally liked anymore. And if they lose, not only do they whatever, it will be his fault. It's not going to be like, oh, he couldn't get it done. It's going to be, it is his fault. I just feel like the upside is maybe not what other people do. Do you disagree?
No, you're right about that. You know, I think, you know, everything, like I said, that was said in the meeting, that was all, like you said, it was a pitch. It's exactly what he wanted to hear. It's what they wanted to, you know, send. That's the message they wanted to send to him. But those are some of the things that aren't being discussed. If they do lose, you're going to hear a ton of criticism of Kevin Durant because, you know, unlike Miami where it was the whole team coming together, this is now Kevin Durant joining a team that just won 73 games and disrupting that. And if it does not go well, then there's no one else to point the finger to, you know, than Durant, unless there's injuries or things like that, obviously. But Durant now is the big game changer. He's the one who's going to change everything. You know, are they going to put the ball in his hands more? Does that mean less shots for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson? You know, how does this affect Draymond Green? They lose Andrew Bogut, Harrison Barnes. And there's so many different things now that happen as a result of this move that he's certainly going to get criticized if they lose. And I'm glad you brought up the villain thing because it's going to be interesting for me to see how Kevin responds to this because he's someone that really cares what people think about him.
Yes.
And he always has.
He does,
you know,
seem
whenever
like that.
There's been, yeah, and whenever there's articles that are negative, he gets upset. Whenever there was that Oklahoma headline that said, you know, he wasn't clutch or whatever it was, Mr. Unreliable, he was so upset about it and they issued an apology. I mean, that's very little stuff. That's, you know, that's not, those things aren't big deals. Now you're going to be, he's going to have a huge target on his back. He could be the villain. Because, look, I mean, I think we all kind of have seen this Warriors team has started to become the villains of the NBA. You know, they have a ridiculously talented roster. Draymond Green rubs people the wrong way. Steph Curry, whether it's his fault or not, gets so much attention in the media that people are already angry. It kind of reminds me of Tim Tebow, where it's like you turn on the TV and you see Steph Curry nonstop, and then fans are just like, okay, we get it. He's great. We don't want to see him anymore.
I think that's a good analogy for Steph, actually, although Steph's a lot better than Tebow.
You know,
but
Yeah, he's so much better than Tebow. But he's an exciting player, but it's almost overkill at this point. You know, you see Steph, you see his wife, you see Riley, and it's just like, okay, fans have had enough. That's the sense that I get on Twitter and talking to people. So I think that you're already starting to see some, you know, change of perception of this Golden State team from, you know, America's team, they're so fun to watch, to, okay, these guys are kind of annoying. Now you had Kevin Durant in the mix, and, you know, obviously people are going to be upset that he left the Thunder. And if they lose, it's going to be very easy to just pour criticism on this team, and they're going to have targets on their back.
You know, I think, I think they're, obviously it's not secret that they're going to be the best team by far, and they very likely will roll. With that said, I think they will miss Bogut a lot, because really when things started going bad for them in that Cleveland series was when Bogut got hurt, because they weren't able to body with Tristan Thompson and LeBron, etc. And they will be like even more so a total finesse team next year, right? I mean, they're going to be the jump shootingest of all jump shooting teams, which will probably work, but they will be vulnerable a little bit to getting beat up. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely possible. I think on defense, they're going to play small, and I think Kevin Durant does fit their defensive style because he's, you know, one of those guys that is, you know, able to defend multiple positions. And we saw during the Western Conference Finals, he just was dominant. You know, he was defending everyone from Curry to Thompson to Green to Bogut. You know, he was everywhere. And I think that's going to really fit in there. But one thing that I do want to add, you know, they are trying to add a rim protector right now. You know, they're having conversations as we speak with a number of free agents that are rim protectors, and no one that is Andrew Bogut. Andrew Bogut is very good at, you know, blocking shots and altering shots at the rim, but they're talking to shot blockers right now. They obviously brought in Zaza Pachulia. They brought in David West. Those guys are nice options to have down in the paint, and they give them some front court depth, but neither guy is a shot blocker, and that's what they're trying to add right now. They've talked to Dwayne Dedman from the Orlando Magic, who actually used to play for the Warriors. They talked to Willie Reed from the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, but those are just random guys. I mean, those are all Festus Ezeli. They don't move the needle. Willie Reed. I mean,
those are specialists. Those are going to be specialists where if you have a matchup and you need a shot blocker, you put them in the game. But those are certain guys they're talking to. They're talking to other higher profile guys as well. You know, I know for a fact those are two guys, but there are others as well. And look, this is a team right now that really has their pick of the litter. We just saw David West sign a minimum contract with them.
Yeah.
Zaza Pachulia, with all this money being thrown around, took $2 million to go play with them. You know, players want to go take one of these veteran minimum spots because they understand this is the favorite to win a championship and maybe multiple championships. So they're talking to every rim protector right now and trying to figure out what's best for them and who they can bring in.
I just want them to lose, Alex. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be a total hater. I want them to lose. I do not believe. Like, I didn't love what Miami did, but I understood it because it was three guys who were on teams that individually could not win the title, and they decided to collectively try to win it. I don't love that, but I get it. But this is just insanity. I mean, you take a team that was the best regular season of all time and add the third best player in the NBA to it. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous, and I want them to lose. I'm going to actively root for them to lose every single game, and I know they won't because I know they're going to be really, really good, but I want them to lose every game. I just don't think – like, this is – I actually don't think this is going to be fun. I really don't.
I think there's a lot of fans that have that same opinion. I think that when you talk to people today, there's people who feel like, you know, what's the point of even watching the season now? You know, there's not going to be a parity. Usually in the NBA, I'll say this, there's, you know, 5, 6, 7 teams
yes.
that have a shot to win a championship. It's not a lot. It's not like the NFL where, you know, every team has a shot because they're single elimination playoffs and things like that. It's tough. But usually you have at least a handful of teams that you know are in the mix. You know, this year, anyone other than Golden State would be a surprise, let's be honest. So I do agree with you. I think there's some fans out there that are kind of upset about this. Obviously, if you're a fan of a contending team, whether it's the Cavaliers or
anything. Not just a fan of a contending team, Alex, a fan of anybody. I mean, it's not just that they took – I mean, this is the thing I don't think gets enough play. It's not just that they're really good. They took – arguably the second or third best team and just took them out of the mix. So if last year there were four teams that reasonably had a chance to win the title, the Warriors, the Thunder, the Spurs, and Cleveland. Well, Tim Duncan's retiring and Paul Gasol's good, but it's not Duncan. I don't think they can win. Now the Thunder can't win. So now it's really just two. I mean, you've taken a league that maybe had four teams that can win and you've made it down to really two. And who wants that?
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. And I think that's where, you know, we had this conversation in the past about super teams and whether it's good for the NBA or not. I think if you're a fan of another team, you're going to be very upset. I think if you're a casual basketball fan, it's interesting because you want to see player movement and you like seeing, you know, guys change teams. You know, certainly people are going to go buy tickets to go watch the Warriors.
Yeah, they will.
They're going to watch them on TV. But if you're a fan of another team, you're upset right now because you feel like you have absolutely no shot to beat this team in a series. And that is understandable. You know, they're adding guys that would be starters of their teams. You know, Zaza Pachulia had 26 double-doubles last year and was a starter. David West is a guy that could start for some teams and was getting starting offers, and both of those guys just signed very small deals to play at the end of the bench. I mean, that's going to upset people no matter what. And I think you kind of touched on this, that they had the 73-win team and they did this. I think, you know, we could really see this kind of blowing up in their face if it doesn't work out, because it could be a huge overreaction. Whenever they lost to the Cavaliers, Joe Lacob came out and said, you know, we were going to be aggressive, but now we're going to be very aggressive. I guarantee that. You can put that in writing. And, you know, he was very adamant that they were going to be aggressive. And when I first saw that, I kind of, you know, was wondering, maybe that's not the best idea. You know, you were very close to winning a championship and, you know, winning back-to-back championships. Maybe going and changing everything isn't the right strategy. So, you know, we could look back on this years from now as either being the start of a dynasty where, you know, this team went and won a bunch of championships together and, you know, made history. Or we could look at this moment as, you know, the time when the Warriors blew up a team that, you know, should have stuck together, that, you know, fit perfectly and overreacted to one NBA Finals loss. And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of route it goes. But it could go either way. And I think, like you said, there's going to be a lot of fans that are hoping for the latter.
Well, I certainly am. Let me talk about a couple of the other things that happened. Dwayne Wade, by the time people listen to this, may have made a decision. Do you think he will join Cleveland? And if so, does it matter?
I don't think he joins the Cavaliers. I mean, it's possible, but at the end of the day, they can offer him, you know, a little more than $3 million. And I just think Dwayne Wade, at this point in his career, he wants to lock up a significant amount of money. When he has a two-year, $40 million offer coming from Miami, when teams like Denver are offering even more than that, it's hard to imagine him leaving all that on the table to go to Cleveland for $3 million. It's just real hard for me to imagine. And like you said, you know, at the end of the day, it's not like that even guarantees Cleveland a championship. Yeah, it makes them stronger. They're a better team with Wade. There's no question about it. But I don't think that it guarantees anything. And I think with Wade's injury history, with his age and all that, I think he's going to try to get a big payday. And I think, you know, all these meetings, all this talk about going and meeting with the Bucks and the Nuggets, and now, you know, all the Cleveland rumors, I think it's just about leverage. I think he's trying to get more money out of Miami, maybe a third year out of Miami. You know, he flirted with some teams last offseason, too. It wasn't to this extent, but he flirted last offseason, and it ended up with him getting a pretty big deal. So I think that's probably what you're seeing again.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to give up $35 million again to move to Cleveland. I mean, I that's hard for me to imagine. Rondo, of course, the Kentucky guy, ends up going to Chicago. Does he have anything left? I mean, like, is he? I watched them a decent amount because he was with Boogie and Willie Cauley-Stein, and he wasn't the same guy. But I don't know. Is that because the team was bad? Like, would you want Rondo if you were a team that was even trying to be decent?
I wouldn't want Rondo. I'll say that. I think that he is someone that has really declined in recent years. And I think in Sacramento, there were a number of games where he had nice stat lines, but it didn't translate to success. And maybe some of that was the team and the system and things like that. But if you talk to players around the league, there's a sense that, you know, Rondo is not only difficult to get along with and difficult in the locker room and butts heads with coaches, but that he goes out and tries to get his own stats. I think there's no coincidence that he was in a contract year this last year, went to Sacramento because he knew he'd be able to put up numbers and try to get paid. And he got a pretty nice contract from Chicago, so it worked out for him. I wouldn't have paid him if I were the Bulls, though. I don't think it makes much sense. It kind of goes against everything the Bulls were saying. You know, they were talking about getting younger and more athletic, and they wanted to add shooting because Fred Hoiberg's offense needs shooters. And now you add Rondo next to Jimmy Butler. And, you know, there were always the rumors about Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose not getting along. Well, Rondo is much more difficult to get along with than Derrick Rose is, and he has the ball in his hands an awful lot. I just think I was surprised by the move. I think it makes a little bit more sense when you consider that the second year is only partially guaranteed. You know, they can cut bait after 1 year if it doesn't work out, if it's a failed experiment. you know, that makes it somewhat of a low-risk, high-reward move. But to think that Rondo is going to be this game-changer that, you know, allows Chicago to be a contender in the Eastern Conference now, I just think that's ludicrous.
So if you're looking at the teams now, I mean, Golden State's clearly the favorite in the West. Who is the second-best team now? Like, is it San Antonio? Let's assume Duncan retires and you get Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, Paul Gasol, the last year of Tony Parker. Are they the second-best team in the West now?
Yeah, I think so. I think it has to be the Spurs. It's hard to bet against Greg Popovich. And I think, you know, they're going to be better in that second year. It's always tough whenever you bring new pieces together and try to make it work. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge obviously was trying to get adjusted last year and acclimated to that situation. Kawhi Leonard will have another year of experience under his belt and be better. And I think when you talk about matchups, it makes sense that, you know, they could cause some problems for Golden State. You know, Kawhi's going to have to go be guarding Kevin Durant. And, you know,
but he's done a pretty good job with that over the years. I mean, he's probably been the player that has consistently guarded Durant as well as you can guard him.
And LeBron. You know, I think Kawhi deserves a ton of credit for that because, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. But he drives both those players crazy. And, you know, those guys still, you know, have had some good games against him, but that's going to happen. But he definitely frustrates guys like Durant and James, who are used to scoring at will. So I think that is very interesting. And he's still so young. He's still going to get better. And that's what's kind of scary. I think LaMarcus will be more comfortable. Greg Popovich, in my opinion, still, you know, arguably the best coach in the NBA. They're going to have depth. You know, they added Pau Gasol. I don't think they're done making moves. They've talked to a number of free agents. I actually just talked to someone earlier today that said they're talking to a handful of free agents, but they're kind of waiting to see what happens with Tim Duncan, whether he retires or not officially. They're trying to see how much money it's going to take to bring Monta Ginobili back. And those kind of things are kind of holding up their other free agent talks right now. But they're going to add to the roster. They have, you know, they have plans to add to the roster, and they're expecting to do that by the end of the week. So there should be some more moves from the Spurs by the end of the week. So don't be surprised if we see some, you know, movement there. But I think they have to be the second best team. But honestly, it's a huge gap. There's no question about it.
You know, well, you know, but you play to be the second best team in part because here's one thing I do. Look, Golden State is clearly better. But one thing they have done with this is they have made themselves more susceptible to injury. Because by losing Barnes, and they're going to lose probably Sean Livingston, and, you know, they'll end up losing – will they get to – I guess they keep Iguodala, right? Will they still have him?
Yeah, it appears that way.
Okay, so if they keep Iguodala – they don't – and they lose Bogut. They don't have the depth. So, like, if Durant were to get hurt – then I think it's easy to say that the Warriors with Durant hurt would be worse than the Warriors last year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a good point about the injuries too, because, you know, obviously Steph Curry has a history of injuries and he's been, you know, better recently in some of the playoffs. But you never know with him. That's always kind of a wild card. Kevin Durant had the Jones fracture and he missed time and he's had some issues. Bounced back in a big way this year, was phenomenal, but has an injury history. You know, Andrew Bogut, they're losing him, and he was someone that was always injured. So, you know, that cancels that out a little bit. But there are guys here that they're relying on that are injury prone. And as you said, when you don't have that kind of depth, when you don't have, you know, a bench that can beat some starting lineups in the NBA, it becomes more difficult, and you have to play your starters more minutes. So, that's where I'm curious to see if they take more of a San Antonio-like approach this year, rather than going after, you know, as many wins as possible in the regular season. Are we going to see them limit minutes and rest some guys for games? It makes sense, honestly. You know, you just lost the championship after winning 73 games. You know, you had a really long season. You've had back-to-back title run. You have a weaker bench now, presumably. I think we're probably going to see them rest more, you know, more of their star players and limit their minutes than in the past. But yeah, no, you're definitely right. They're more susceptible to injuries for sure. It'll be interesting to see who else they add to this bench because they do have a few more spots. So they could, you know, potentially add some more difference makers, but they're definitely less deep than last year.
Yeah, I don't know that they can add any difference makers, though. I mean, they don't have the money to add difference makers. I mean, Zaza and those guys are okay, but they're not difference makers. I mean, they are.
Yeah,
they kind of are what they are, right? Yeah, exactly. They are what they are right now, and they are what they are is great. But it would be interesting if they, if somebody got, you don't want to root for anybody to get hurt. But if somebody got hurt, I do think they would actually be a team worse than the team they were before, which is kind of a weird, which is a weird.
Yeah, no, that is a good point. Yeah, because they wouldn't have, you know, the next guy being able to step up right there, and there definitely would be a bigger drop off for sure. That's a good point.
All right, so then on the east side, clearly Cleveland's the best. Is the second best team now what? Maybe Toronto or Indiana? I mean, Indiana looks like they got a lot better, right?
I would say Boston. I love what Boston.
Oh, Boston. You like Boston. Okay.
Yeah, I really like the Boston move. I give Indiana a lot of credit. I think Indiana did a good job being able to bring in Jeff Teague, Thaddeus Young, Al Jefferson. You know, I think they deserve credit, and they're going to be better, I think. But when you talk about the second best team in the Eastern Conference, I look at this Boston squad, and they were so good this year, despite not having, you know, a superstar player. Obviously, Isaiah Thomas emerged as an all-star. But Brad Stevens is one of the best coaches in the NBA, in my opinion. Isaiah Thomas, I think, will continue to get better. I think their biggest weakness was their front court. You know, Jared Sillinger, Kelly Olynyk, these guys were okay, but they weren't, you know, anything special. Now you have Al Horford, who I think is one of the more underrated players in the NBA. So consistent, so dominant down low. I think he's going to help them a lot. I think the big thing here, too, is they still have a ton of cap room. You know, the reason they were still in the mix with the whole Kevin Durant sweepstakes is because they still have a max contract. They still have money to spend. So they could go out and add supporting pieces and put some more talent around, you know, that core of Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, Jay Crowder. You know, they have a pretty good team right now. And you want to talk about depth. They're a very deep team.
Yeah, they're very deep.
And those are guys that have all bought into what Brad Stevens is doing. So I like Boston a lot. I think they're probably the team right now that I'm most excited about in the East. Toronto, I've always been kind of low on. I'm not huge on Toronto and the moves they've made and how they kind of constructed their roster. And I think Indiana will be better. But right now, Boston is that team that I'm looking at as that number two team in the East, especially if they can go out and make some other moves.
Yeah, and they can't even get James Young on the court because they have so much depth. He still just only plays in the summer league. All right, well.
Poor James.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always thought of the UK guys. He was the one that was picked way too high. Let me ask you real quick. I mean, I know you didn't spend a ton of time on the draft, but Scal went to Sacramento, Tyler Ulis to Phoenix, and Jamal Murray to Denver. Just what is your take on those locations for those guys? I mean, I think Tyler got a guaranteed contract, which is great news for him. But how do you think – I think Jamal Murray leads the NBA rookies in scoring this year. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's very possible. I think it's either going to be him or Brandon Ingram. But he's going to get a ton of opportunities in Denver. I love it for him. You know, initially, it seemed like he wouldn't fall that far. I think we talked about, you know, where we were kind of mocking those guys out. And, you know, we talked about maybe Denver, maybe Sacramento. And that seemed kind of crazy at the time. But, you know, it was a really weird draft. So there's no question about it. So – he slipped a little bit further, but he found a great situation with a ton of young talent around him. Very good coach. I think that's great for him. With Scal, it's interesting because, you know, I had mentioned to you, I went to his pro day, and he just absolutely dominated. And, yeah, it was 1-on-0. But after that pro day, people were talking about him going top 10. And, you know, there was all this talk about how he could pick his situation now. And he was turning down workouts just because he was so confident where he was going to go. So to see that happen, I think it was a real shock for him and his camp to slip so far. But that's what happens when you choose not to work out with teams and when you choose not to do any workouts against anyone. You know, when you do drill work, and we talked about that, you know, how much can you really learn from drill work, especially when you have, you know, bad game film, you know, what can you really learn from that? Teams were scared to pick him. They didn't want to, you know, pick him with a lottery pick or even, you know, a pick in the early 20s. They were very hesitant. So I think that's what really hurt Scal. You know, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now. Sacramento is not really the best situation in terms of developing players, unfortunately. I know, you know, all the Kentucky guys are there, so I'm sorry to say that. But it's kind of dysfunctional there. So I'm curious to see what happens. I hope it worked out for him because he seems like a great guy. You know, I've had great experiences with him. But there's just so many big men there. The front court has a log jam. He slipped way further, so he doesn't have the huge guaranteed contract that he expected. It's just kind of strange. I'm not sure what's going to happen there with him.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much, Alex Kennedy from BasketballInsiders.com. Great job, as always. Before I let you go, do you shave? Do you have to shave, Alex? Are you like a regular man that you have to shave?
I do. I just stopped shaving for like a few months, and I shoot videos every week for Basketball Insiders, and I was getting these mean comments.
Wait a minute, you stopped shaving, like, period? Did you grow a beard, or did you, like...
I grew a beard. You have pube facial hair. No, I grew a beard, and I was getting comments like, I look like the guy from Making a Murderer and things like that. You know, I basically just was, you know, just lazy with it. I was just like, you know what, I'm not doing it. I'm not shaving. And I got some mean comments. You know, I definitely can grow one. I mean,
all right, well,
it's not the thickest, but it's okay.
Well, let me say, if you're going to start shaving, Harry's.com. I'd like you to get some Harry's.
There we go.
Harry's.com. You don't want to have people mocking your appearance, Alex. Go to Harry's.com, a good price and a good shave. If you shave with Harry's, your life will be better. The razors, it's like 5 blades. It's great. 5 German-crafted blades, half the price of the leading brand. Go to Harry's.com. The promo code is Matt, and you get $5 off. HARRYS.com. If you've been listening to me, you've heard me talk about this for 3 years. I still use them because they are the best razors you can have. HARRYS.com. Promo code Matt. And let me say this. Tweet Alex Kennedy or say hi to him at Alex Kennedy NBA and maybe look and say, hey, shave a little bit, Alex. Like, if you see him walking around with scruffy, like a teen wolf beard, go, hey, Harry's.com. Promo code Matt. Get razors delivered right to you. Alex, thank you very much, and we're going to give a call here to Michael Waltrip. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, man. Anytime.
All right. Now, happy to be joined on the phone. Former NASCAR driver, now commentator, and doing team owning, or at least did for a long period of time, Michael Waltrip, Kentucky Zone. Michael, how are you, sir?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day here in North Carolina. How are y'all?
Doing wonderful. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. You know, I'm excited to have you on, A, obviously because you're a Kentucky fan, but B, I began, once my Rusty Wallace fandom sort of went away, I sort of picked up you right after it, starting in, you know, I don't know, 2000-ish, and watched your success. So it is an honor to have you on.
Well, I appreciate that much. I've always been a big fan of Kentucky sports, and I know you're passionate about that. And so having the chance to chat is always fun.
Well, let me ask you about that. Your UK fandom, like, talk to me a little bit about that. When did you start becoming a UK fan, and how much do you watch them, get to follow them now?
Well, as a kid, I always watched the replays at night, like at 10:30 at night on Kaywood Leopard and those guys covering the games, and that was a lot of fun for me. You know, we only had 3 channels back then, and to be able to watch Kentucky play, Kyle Macy, Goose Givens, Rick Roby, those guys were all my favorite players, and so I just grew up that way. And then moving to North Carolina, obviously they think that's the basketball capital of the world, and we happen to disagree, and so I've had a lot of fun over the years arguing with people about who's better.
See, I went to law school in North Carolina, and I know what you're dealing with there. People there believe that they created basketball. Are you like me? Have you had to, like, get in these little arguments over time about where the actual real home is?
Yes, but it's been fun. You know, North Carolina's obviously got a strong program and a lot of great basketball down here. But, you know, I believe basketball was born, and I know where I believe the most storied and best program in America is, and that's in Kentucky.
What's your take on John Calipari? I mean, he's obviously had a ton of success, but what's your take on the Cats coach?
I like his passion. You know, I love who he is, and been fun to follow him over the years. As I've gotten deeper into the NASCAR world, I probably haven't followed the sporting world, the basketball world, as closely as I used to, but I always like flipping on the TV and seeing how they're going and what's happening and seeing how they're playing. And I'm looking forward to a new season. I was fortunate enough to go a couple years ago when we beat Kansas in the finals, and went with Quint Boyer, who's a Kansas guy. And so to be able to be able to have bragging rights after that day, that was quite a lot of fun.
That was a pretty amazing day there in New Orleans. I mean, winning that title, it had been a little while. So you were in the crowd there.
Yes, I was, and I enjoyed that game. And it was a rainy night in New Orleans, and, you know, there wasn't a whole lot going on after the game. So we just went and had a beer, and I was able to brag about the Cats winning.
Well, I wish I'd known you were there because there was stuff going on. You just had to know where it was. I'd have gotten you, Mikey, and brought you to the hotel where the team was.
Well,
you'd have had a good time.
I was out of the loop on that one.
Well,
damn it.
Well, we'll make sure the next time that you're not. I want to talk to you a little bit about NASCAR. I am a fan, but I want your opinion on this. I used to be a massive NASCAR fan. I mean, I watched. There was a period of time where I watched every race, late 90s, early 2000s, and I still will watch the big ones, Daytona, Talladega. I love going to Kentucky. I go to the race there every year. But I just don't feel it is as competitive or the personalities are quite the same. Am I wrong about that, or has there been a change, you think, in the last 8 to 10 years?
It's definitely different, but the passion and the desire to win is as great as it's ever been, and it's harder than it's ever been. So Tony Stewart retiring is going to make it look a little bit different yet. But nevertheless, Denny Hamlin, Ricky Stenhouse, Kyle Larson, those kids are awesome, and I'm looking forward to watching them race for many years to come.
When you were racing, you broke in. Give me a little bit of the story of how you ended up a driver. I mean, your brother obviously did it, but what was your path to sort of becoming a NASCAR driver?
Well, my brother, you know, he was everything I knew about NASCAR. Growing up in Kentucky, you didn't have a ton of NASCAR, and to be able to have a brother that was right in the middle of it certainly made me want to watch every race. And I think as a kid, that was the key to me becoming a race car driver, was the fact that, you know, I had a reason to watch and I wanted to be a part of it. And Darryl was a big key in me being able to have the direction and have the knowledge of what it would take to even do that if I wanted to. So he was a big important part of my growing up and being a race car driver when I finally got old enough to drive.
And you know that area, the Owensboro area with you guys and the Green Brothers. I mean, was Darryl's entry what sort of got the whole Owensboro NASCAR scene, or was there something else that led that to be like a little pocket, I guess Jeremy Mayfield as well, a little pocket of NASCAR?
No, that was all Darryl. We grew up, we just happened to grow up at the right time, the Green Brothers and Jeremy and me, because we, you know, we wouldn't have had the look into NASCAR that Darryl provided all of us if it weren't for Darryl. And then if it weren't for the fact that he did it, we might not have been bold enough to think we could do it. But he showed us it could be done, and we were very attentive and very much students of the game. And all of us made it to NASCAR and had success to one level or another.
You know, you drove for a long time before you got to DEI, and you'd had a career where I think you won – the All-Star race one year, but hadn't won a regular race, and then, you know, obviously had the success at Daytona. Did there come a point when you've been driving that long that you think, like, is it ever going to happen, or did you still believe, like, you know, I'm going to get over that hump, it's just a matter of time?
Well, I mean, you always believe, and I knew that I could do it, and I thought that I would do it, but making it happen was certainly going to be another story. And I knew that if I got the right chance, I could indeed win. And I just began to wonder a bit. I mean, I was still in my 30s, but I began to wonder a bit, would I ever get that chance? You know, would my turn come along to get in a car that would get me that type of performance that I needed to get to victory lane? And fortunately, Dale believed in me, and we were friends, and he thought that if I was given the opportunity to race in his car, I could win, and that's what we did. I know that Dale was really into making sure that people knew that I was going to win. I could win. And, you know, he gave me a lot of support in the off season that year before we got to Daytona. And then we worked really closely together, of course, throughout the course of that race as well.
I think that's, you know, the story of that race I've always thought is a story that should be in a movie. I mean, it was, you know, you're not just his passing, but your friendship with him, Dale Jr. being a part of it. You cross the finish line and you win, you know, winning the Daytona 500, the biggest race. You soon after find what's happened to Dale. I remember seeing your brother on CNN that night or the night after saying, you know, how sorry he felt for you with all of those emotions. How did you process all that? You have this greatest moment of your career while also something tragic happens.
Well, it was just a day where you had to put yourself, you know, put yourself way back in line and just, you know, realize that there was a family hurting because their dad or their husband wasn't here anymore, and there were fans are hurting because that was their favorite driver, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody honored Dale. And so my thoughts were, didn't have anything to do with me for a long, long time. They were all about Dale.
Did that make it, when you won the second time, in some ways even sweeter, because you really got to, at that point, fully celebrate it, correct?
Oh, yeah. That was a big day. And it still is today, you know, being able to celebrate two of those. It never gets old hearing two-time Daytona 500 champion.
Now, during that whole time that you were driving, you obviously had a huge personality. So I assumed at some point you would end up doing television and doing commentary. I think you're great at it. Do you enjoy that as much as driving, or is it not this? I mean, clearly it's not the same, but do you enjoy getting to be on television and doing the whole thing?
I love it. I love every bit of it. You know, I've been around racing since I was born, and to find a way to continue to be involved, despite, you know, getting older, I can still talk about cars and I can still be a part of something that I love very much. And so I'm very thankful for that.
If you were made czar of NASCAR and you were going to change a couple of things, is there anything part of it that if I'm Michael Waltrip and I'm in charge, I would change this or that to make it better?
Well, yeah, I'd probably change 100 things, but first of all, the cars are too loud. They drive people crazy. They need to be quieter. cars are too expensive. They need to be more stock. And I think that's probably about it. Maybe have some Wednesday night shows, just a bit of a different schedule.
Isn't it? I mean, you know, when I watch these races, it felt like when I first started watching, and they would go to places like Rockingham and North Wilkesboro, et cetera, there was a lot more sort of character in a lot of the places they go. Is that just one of the things that as a sport grows, you just kind of lose that stuff and there's really nothing you can do about it?
Well, I love the places we visit now, and I think that some of the venues are amazing, particularly Kansas and Phoenix and California. One we just came from in San Fran. I mean, they're amazing, and I'm thankful for everywhere we go. I just think there's a lot of places out there that would be fun to go to still with the Cup cars, you know? A place like Iowa that maybe hosts 30 or 40,000 people, you got a Cup race there, that'd be a big deal. It'd be a sold out show, first of all. And may I remind you that only about 15,000 people were in Golden State to watch the Game 7. I mean, 40 events that are sold out are fun. These massive stadiums that you can't sell out, that kind of makes it seem like it's less important. You know, when they redid Daytona this year with the stadium-style seating and the atmosphere that was there sold out, what a great race that was and what a great event it was. So, you know, there's always things you can tweak and change. And those are just some of the things that come to mind for me.
Well, obviously the Kentucky race is coming up. You've become sort of a unofficial, some maybe a slightly official spokesman, this being your home area. You know, I know over the years one of the things they sold was the bumpiness of the track, and that was kind of a unique thing. But has that gone away now? Is it back to is it not as bumpy? What's the update on that?
They just put new pavement down, so it's smooth as glass, and they reconfigured the track somewhat. So there's a lot of question marks as we head to Kentucky. The teams tested there, but wasn't a whole lot of grip on the track, and so coming with the different aerodynamic package as well. So a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of anxious race car drivers to hit the track next week and see what they got.
But the less grip, though, does that make for a better or a worse race from the fans' perspective? I know for drivers they may not love it, but does that slipping and sliding help from the fans?
I think so. I think the fans will like it. I think the aero package we ran at Michigan is the same one we'll have at Kentucky, and it was a really competitive, fun race, a lot of passing. So I'm looking forward to it and seeing what the place is all about. I mean, anything new and different, I like it. We'll go see what new and different means in Kentucky.
All right, I know you got to go, Mikey, but real quick, let me ask you about this coming basketball season. Of course, a lot of new players. You may not know all of them, but I know you've probably heard the buzz that Cal's going to have another big team. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I can't wait to every year. Like last year, I thought we were going to be the best team in the country, and it turns out we weren't. So I've always got a lot of confidence in the program and who steps up and who becomes that star player that everybody talks about after the games on the next morning. So I'm going to be watching intently and can't wait to see what the story's all about in 2016-17.
All right, give me the Michael Waltrip dream Kentucky lineup. You give me your five guys. If you're picking your five favorite to get on the court, who is it?
Well, I already said most of them because I'm old. You know, I like
you like the 78 group, right?
Yeah, but I love Jay Seidler. He was
the blonde bomber. Look, yes.
Try to heave up three-pointers, you know, shots from half court and act like we're Jay Seidler. So those guys I think are probably my favorite. It's been fun to see the one-and-dones come through there lately, but they don't really resonate as Kentucky players to me. Those guys back in the day, that certainly my favorite Kentucky player ever, probably Rex Chapman, because he's from my hometown and we're buddies a bit. So there's a bunch of old guys that I'm really fond of.
Well, I will. I saw Rex just last weekend, and I'll tell him you called him an old guy next time I see him. But I really appreciate you, Mikey, taking the time to do this, and good luck with everything.
Appreciate you having me. I hope everybody comes out and enjoys the race in Kentucky. I know I'm going to be there, and I will.
Yeah, the race is a week from this weekend at Kentucky Speedway. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Will. Send lawyers kinds of money. Woo!